Thank you, Professor. It seems that in this day and age you have to declare your conflicts of interest pretty early, so I thought I'd better declare that I'm a passionate renewable energy advocate up front. That doesn't mean, of course, that you can't be objective about the things that you're thinking about. I'd like this morning to just make 3 points. Before I do that, I just wanted to reflect on the imperative that sits out in front of us. By 2030, this country's got to invest some $35 billion in energy infrastructure. $35 billion to be invested. And we, in parallel, have this big abatement challenge. How do we create a low-emission future in our energy sector in this country? Quite obviously, and we've heard from the Minister and we've heard from both speakers this morning, that there'll have to be a mix of solutions in that. So as a renewable energy advocate, I'm not going to stand up here and say, don't look at clean coal. Clean coal is obviously something that we need to push hard on. But at the same time, we need to look hard at renewable energy, we need to look hard at energy efficiency in order to address this pretty big challenge. The first point I want to make is that, please, can we get the policy setting right? Can we make it simple? And can we keep it consistent? 5 years ago, when I went pretty regularly to the UK, arrived in the UK to hear, as a hydro person, by the way, if your hydros are greater than 30 megawatts, you're not renewable. In other words, you're sort of on the nose. And that positioning of the Europeans didn't just stop them doing anything in Europe. It then meant that their investment people saw that hydropower was on the nose, and hydropower didn't get anywhere really around the world. And it's been 20 years since there's been really significant investment back in hydropower. I'm a vice president of the International Hydropower Association, and we represent some 80 countries across the world in hydropower. So we've sat down and looked really hard at developing sustainability guidelines so that good hydro projects get built and unsustainable ones don't get built. And through a lot of pushing and establishing such guidelines in the last 5 years, we now no longer have a view, if you go to Europe today, that large hydro is not renewable. Large hydro has to be sustainable. So that simple policy setting, if you're greater than 30 megawatts, you're no good, was pretty deleterious to the hydropower industry. We're now seeing in Europe about 5,000 megawatts of pumped storage, both in the development phase and back on the books. So suddenly those existing environmental footprints are turning back into pumped storage, augmenting the infrastructure in Europe. We're seeing the World Bank getting back into hydropower globally, provided that investment is done on a sustainable basis. So it's pretty clear that if you get the policy right, people will invest. If they invest, the capacity gets going. The fact that there was no investment in hydropower for 20 years essentially has seen most of those people retire. There isn't in the world today, either in North America, in South Africa, in Europe, or in Australia, much capacity to build hydropower anymore, because most of us have retired. You have to get investment going, otherwise capacity won't be built. Without a strong industry, you're not going to get lower costs. What happened in this country? MRET came along. We in Tasmania said, this is terrific. We'll get into wind. It needed MRET to get it started. So we developed a lot of capacity, a lot of capability. We partnered with Vestas. Vestas come to Tasmania. They build nacelle plants up in Wynyard. Then MRET was not extended. The policy didn't continue on. And the wind industry faltered. The plant that was building nacelles in Tasmania closed. And those large manufacturers headed off towards the US, where clearly it was a more fertile ground. When you go elsewhere in the world and you look at places like India and France, you don't think of various states. You think of those countries and the way the policies are established for those countries. Well, that's how people think of Australia. They don't think of it as Victoria, South Australia, New South Wales. They think of it as Australia. And when you come here, you don't come and base yourself in Melbourne and try and just run the local rules, and then we've got to figure out new rules when we go across a river into another state. There's been a lot of talk this morning about getting a national position, but it's absolutely imperative. It staggers me that that doesn't get done in this country and establish rules so that people will come and they've got clarity of investment and they can get on with it. So for me, it's a matter of getting the policy settings right, getting them in place for some consistency, and don't make them too complicated. We're already in the electricity market, and it's a pretty complicated market. Tasmania has just joined. I've spent the last 4 years of my life getting into this national electricity market, and there's nothing simple about it. Having another suite of multi-layered renewable energy arrangements isn't what we need to get the industry going again. Clearly, the discussion, I won't go into the carbon pricing discussion, but clearly that's stopping not only our own investment, but investment of our customers. The uncertainty is simply not good for the economy of this country. Point number two. From our perspective, we need to maintain and enhance the current renewable energy contribution. We're really pleased that through Basslink, right now, potentially some of that electricity is coming under Bass Strait. We've been able to, as a result, fully utilise the excess capacity that we had in Tasmania in order to supply the peak energy demands in Victoria. And in turn, you're helping us when we haven't got any water, and it's getting pretty challenging as far as the drought's concerned in Tasmania as well. That bit of infrastructure has also helped us get wind capability in Tasmania. So the renewable energy engine of Tasmania is being harnessed even more strongly by getting an investment in like Basslink. But unfortunately, our infrastructure has been there developed in the last 80 years. It itself is ageing. It itself now needs a significant amount of reinvestment in order to keep it going. And that investment needs to be in a strong climate of, we think, the renewable energy certificate climate provides that incentive for us to develop, not only to refurbish, but what we've been doing is bringing latest technology, better runners into our machines, enhancing the output of existing machines. One small example, in a 90 megawatt power station just in the city of Launceston, we've increased its output capacity by 27%. Essentially, we ripped out the generator, replaced in exactly the same physical space a latest technology generator, which produces essentially 27% more energy. This was enhanced by having the MREC scheme in place and picking up innovation in technology in the state. We're also at the position of closing down a very old 98-year-old historic power station on the west coast. We can't afford to just start winding our infrastructure back. It needs the right incentive position to keep that infrastructure healthy and going for the future. The third point I wanted to make was ensuring that capacity building continues strongly in renewable energy. The issue that I mentioned of MREC starting, we got all our people geared up, ready to go, and then it falters. In order to keep that skill base there, we decided, well, we'll go to China. Because the alternative to going to China was putting those people onto a whole raft of different topics and losing the impetus we'd gained into renewable energy. And so now we're just in the process of establishing our fourth wind footprint in China. And the Chinese, they love it. We just had a big contingent from Guohe Investments down in Tasmania, very impressed with our credentials in renewable energy, and it's working well with the Chinese desire to get increased renewable energy in their policy setting. And they're very clear what they want. They simply want to get increased renewable energy on the ground in China. In Australia, we've heard this morning that with 850 megawatts of wind on the ground already, that we've got some 6,000 megawatts in the pipeline. So we're seeing it come back again. Is the capacity there to actually construct it and develop it, given that a number of the developers have said, well, Australia, gee, the sovereign risk is a bit difficult there. Well, why don't we just go to America? It's clear now. And they've moved out. And will they come back? The other issue, I guess, in capacity is the question of innovation, driving technical innovation strongly. We've heard a question that came up a minute ago about the issues of spinning reserve when you have a large proportion of wind in the infrastructure. And what we're seeing in the European setting, figures in the order of 20% penetration of wind into those power systems, well, clearly those at the moment are pushing the boundaries of penetration of wind. But unless we get a technical focus and a capacity to figure some of those things through, you won't stretch those boundaries. So I'm a big advocate of getting the technical capacity, push innovation really hard. We've been doing it in a small way on King Island, the subject of a community that should it be in Tasmania or should it be in Victoria. But it's a diesel-based environment. So we've put wind on the island. We've integrated it with diesel. We've developed the world's first vanadium redox batteries, essentially big tanks like your water tank in your house. Three or four of these full of electrolytic materials, vanadium redox battery, designed to store energy when the wind doesn't blow. It's those sorts of things that could be used in remote areas around Australia or particularly useful for some of the Pacific Islands where there's high dependency on diesel, where you've got both cost and emissions as an issue. So one of the things I was interested this morning in listening to the Minister's comments was his list of technology ideas that are coming along. That's part of, to coin an awful phrase, a sort of clever country approach that we ought to be taking. Which I think is part of the whole capacity building question. So for me, in summary, there are three points to meet the challenge. Number one, get that policy setting right. Keep it simple, keep it clear, and don't delay unduly. Number two, maintain and enhance the current renewable energy contribution. Don't let it slip away. And number three, get the capacity build going in this country, because without the skills and innovative ideas, we're not going anywhere. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.